Ted from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, a show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
John, how's the apocalypse treating you? You're all right? We're surrounded by a virus. We're falling.
What?
Yeah.
Why have you not heard about this up until now?
Did you not? Oh. I didn't mean for you to find out this way.
Wow. This changes everything.
Did you not realize we've been doing all these episodes, via computers, and not in the studio since March?
I thought you were just being, exceptionally quiet and restrained.
Yes, I'm quite aloof.
Yeah.
I can't think of that famous recluse's name. The dude, I fucked up the...
Salinger?
Huh?
J.D. Salinger?
No, Howard Hughes, right? The dude with the toenails?
Howard Hughes, yes. He was another recluse.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, he was another recluse.
Yeah. Ted Kaczynski, he was...
Sure, yeah, recluse.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like those recluses, but with podcasting.
I mean, you've always modeled yourself after those four men.
Yeah, I grew up my beard. I wear tissue boxes for shoes.
Right, you watch Station Zebra on a continuous loop.
Yeah, I urinate in many jars around my home.
Yeah, you write Catcher in the Rye, even though it's already been written, which I think is a little weird. But hey, you do you.
I think it's what I'm doing. What I did it's more of a reboot or a reimagining. I think I just think it'd be better if he was. A black man living in New Jersey and the rest.
Hang on. What if instead of rye, it was a catcher in wheat? Huh? Game changer.
Mind blown. Get the production people on the horn. I think we got a gold mine here.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're like anybody in the pandemic world. We're dealing with the isolation and the monotony and all that fun stuff. But we're muddling through it, and we hope you guys are too.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of monotony and isolation, we got a little of a – we watched a movie here that kind of touches on that. That's a nice little segue. You see that?
Yeah, that's what is setting us up for. It's we're doing the new movie Palm Springs, which is streaming on Hulu right now. It stars SNL alum Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti.
Yeah, exactly. This movie came out a week ago, actually, on my wedding anniversary, July 10th, and written by Andy Ciara and directed by Max Barbacow. And funny enough, this is the first full-length movie for both these people. Like, I looked it up. They seemed like to have done just mainly shorts before this. So this is, like, their first foray into the cinema.
Yeah, I was reading a little about this before we started recording. Andy Ciara wrote the first draft of the script during his second year as a film student at AFI. The movie concerns a time loop, very much like Groundhog Day. But I suppose the twist or the switcheroo is that both Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti's characters are caught in the time loop together.
Right. I mean, I love how, like, this movie, Groundhog Day, pretty much set up an entire genre of movies. Because, like, I really don't remember a movie before it that was like it. And ever since that movie came out, there have been a number of, movies and TV shows, like Russian Doll, that have come out that have kind of used that same formula, like Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise movie, and Happy Death Day, and stuff like that. And it's really interesting how that one movie sort of created this whole genre, because everybody always says, like, whenever a time loop movie comes out, they always, always compare it to Groundhog Day.
Well, I mean, of course, the concept of time loops has existed in science fiction for ages. I mean, I don't know what the first story to use a time loop in fiction was, but I mean, that goes way back. But Groundhog Day is sort of the touchstone for everyone because it's the movie that most everyone has seen.
Right.
And even if you haven't seen it, you're familiar with it. So.
Right. But yeah. And so with this movie, it takes that time loop narrative and it adds, usually in those movies, it's always just one person experiencing the time loop. So this one presupposes what if it was more than one person in the time loop?
Right.
And then it brings up a whole bunch of different you know, theories and issues and whatnot, which is which we'll get into.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and spoil it now. I really, really liked this movie. This was great. This was so well done. It's great. And like as we talk about movies on here, we tend to like summarize it. So I'm sure we're going to get into some spoilers. But if you haven't watched the movie yet, stop listening to the podcast right now and go check it out on Hulu. It is best seen without spoilers, and it's best seen going into it pretty fresh and knowing as little about it as going in. I didn't even watch the trailer before I watched the movie, and I'm really glad I watched it that way.
Oh, wow. You went in with totally fresh eyes. That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I only knew vaguely about it. I knew that it starred Andy Samberg and Kristen Milania, and I know that it involved a time loop, and I knew that they were at like a destination wedding, and that was about it. So I was very pleasantly surprised throughout. There are some neat twists and turns.
Yeah, I mean, I'll spoil it too. I really like this movie as well. This movie's been getting a lot of good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. It's at 93%. With critics 93%, audiences 91%. But even though that's some pretty high praise, and like I'd say it's well deserved. I really dug this movie.
Yeah, really well done. I am definitely going to keep an eye out on what Max Barbacow and Andy Sierra do from now on. I was really impressed with this. It's really worth seeing. So go check it out, because I really don't want to spoil this movie for anybody. Check it out on Hulu. You can get a free month of Hulu, so no excuses.
Right, get out there and do it. Like, what else are you doing? You're stuck indoors all day.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. It's a nice way to kick off a Hulu experience.
Absolutely. So, should we get into it? Should we start jabbing and jawing about this fine film?
Sure. Let's dive in. As we said, it concerns a destination wedding. It's we've got Tala and Abe getting married on November 9th, and they're at this sort of hotel resort thing out in the California desert.
Right, in Palm Springs. And actually, I also looked it up. Apparently, November 9th, that's the same day that Albert Einstein received his Nobel Prize for theoreticals in physics.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that was an intentional connection or what.
Maybe.
Very interesting.
Ah, Arthur Lieber.
So we start out, I found it very interesting that it starts out kind of midstream for Andy Samberg. We see him wake up and we see him start to go about his day, but it sort of gradually comes to light that this is not his first day in the time loop. It's starting out in the middle of the time loop for him. He's been in it already for an unspecified amount of time, and he's gotten used to it, and he's really kind of past it in a way. And I find that very interesting, because they very nearly started Groundhog Day out that way.
Yeah, very much so. So in this movie, Andy Samberg plays Niles. He's the boyfriend of one of the bridesmaids. And he's kind of gone. He's at this point, he's pretty much in this time loop already. He knows how everything goes out, how everything works out. He kind of has like a very, I felt like the vibe he was going for was kind of like a young Chevy Chase or young Bill Murray. You know how like they both play that part where they're kind of the guy that kind of goes to the beat of their own drummer and kind of has like a laissez-faire attitude about everything and kind of, you know, knows how everything's going to, they don't care how things are going to turn out. They don't care how they're perceived. Type of vibe.
Yeah, I mean, he's very blasé by this point in the movie. So he's, you know, it's kind of like the point that Bill Murray is at around the middle of Groundhog Day. And I know we keep coming back to Groundhog Day, but it's an easy reference to make, where he's just kind of over everything because he's tried most everything and nothing really changes his situation. So he has literally decided nothing really matters.
You get to see how little he cares, because he shows up to the wedding wearing a loud Hawaiian shirt and loud yellow swim trunks.
Yes. Yeah. He's not even bothering to get dressed for the wedding anymore. but we see him wake up. He wakes up in bed, and he wakes up and his girlfriend, Misty is just putting like lotion on her leg, and he's like, "Oh, that's a nice leg." And then we cut to them having sex.
Yeah. And
his girlfriend cuts it short because she's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I have to get ready," and he hasn't even finished yet. And she's like, she's very apologetic. She's like, "Hey, I'm sorry. I've never had a guy like have so much trouble finishing up." And he doesn't even especially care about that.
Yeah.
So he's very blasé, like I said. And we cut to him just floating in the pool on an inner tube, or on like a little pizza flotation device, just having some drinks. He's drinking throughout the day, just never ending stream of canned beer.
Yeah, like that's the thing about Niles. He's constantly drinking or drunk throughout a good portion of this movie.
Yeah, yeah, and actually, like, apparently the early drafts of the movie were Andy Sierra, the writer, he said the script originally had more in common with Leaving Las Vegas than Groundhog Day, and he deliberately limited the script so that it could be something he could actually make. So he didn't have any science fiction elements in it at first.
Wow.
And as we'll see, some science fiction elements were added later.
Yeah, Leaving Las Vegas ends quite differently, if I recall.
Yes, yes. It gets dark.
I mean, I've never seen it, but like I've read about it, and even just reading about it, it's like, this is like the most depressing thing I've ever read.
Yeah, yeah. I saw it years ago, like back in the 90s, I think, not long after it came out. But anyway... So Niles, he goes to the wedding. Like we said, he doesn't even bother dressing for the wedding. He's there in his casual duds, drinking throughout the movie. And during the reception, his girlfriend, who is the maid of honor, she's not the maid of honor. She's one of the bridesmaids, but she's a close friend of the bride. And she starts giving like the worst bridesmaid speech ever. She does that cliche thing where like you look up, you know, Webster's dictionary defines such and so as blah 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 blah, and at the end of her speech, she's like, you know, "Oh, I googled the two most important things to a marriage, and it's like love and compassion." And then at the end, she just like reads a definition of compassion and it doesn't go on from there.
It's very heartfelt.
It is horrible. Then it comes to Sarah, who is the maid of honor. This is Krista Milioti's character, and she's like, "Oh, I didn't realize I'd have to make a speech." And she gets up there, and it's very awkward. But then Niles swoops in and rescues her, and he gives a really nice speech and rescues her from having to make her own bad speech.
He gives this very heartfelt speech, even though no one knows who he really is. And I believe he ends with something. It kind of. It's like you expect it to be kind of silly and goofy, but it's actually a really sweet, heartfelt speech. And he, you know, we may be born lost, but now we are found. He says that at some point. And everybody's like, "Wow, who is that guy?"
Yeah, no one really knows him because Niles is just there as Misty's boyfriend. So he doesn't really know anyone at the wedding besides Misty.
Right.
And then so like later in the reception, Andy Samberg comes up to Chris Milioti. He's being kind of funny and charming, and he's navigating the dance floor almost as if he knows exactly what's going to happen at any given moment. Like there's a drunk guy who starts to stumble and fall backwards, and Niles pulls out a chair for him to fall right into just very smoothly.
Yeah, like he takes other people's drinks. It's almost as if he's been to this wedding before.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very much like towards the end of Groundhog Day, when Bill Murray knows whenever everything is going to happen, right down to the second, like catching the kid out of the tree. He's just able to navigate it that perfectly. You know, so he's not the god, but he's a god.
Shove the piece of cake in his mouth.
You know, but they get to talking, Niles and Sarah, and they eventually head out, like out into the desert and having drinks. And, you know, we're thinking they're clicking. We're thinking there's some chemistry. We're thinking they're maybe going to hook up. We're going to have some sexy times.
Yeah. Oh, actually, before that, I think Sarah said, well, you know, Sarah's played, you know, Christina Milioti said, "Well, aren't you Misty's boyfriend, like, you can't just walk away with me. And he's like, oh, no, it's okay. Then he shows that Misty is actually cheating on him with the officiant of the wedding, who's this, like, Australian dude who came in, like, a cowboy hat and, like, this kind of luchador jacket, I guess, like, full of roses on it. And, he shows her that, oh, yeah, like, Misty, like, the guy is, like, you know, kind of going downtown in the bathroom.
Yeah. So, you know, he doesn't really feel any compunction about quote unquote cheating on his girlfriend, because obviously their relationship is not in a good place and she's been cheating on him for apparently quite some time.
Right.
And Sarah's got her own issues. She says to Niles early on, she's talking about her family. She says, they all see me as a liability who drinks too much. And she's actually the older sister of the bride, Tala. But she's kind of the black sheep of the family.
Right.
So Niles and Sarah are out in the desert and it's getting romantic and they're making out. And then suddenly, Niles is starting to undress. He takes off his shirt and he's wearing underwear underneath his bathing suit for some reason. And then suddenly out of nowhere, he gets shot with an arrow.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere.
There's no foreshadowing. No, it's just literally out of nowhere. And Sarah, of course, starts freaking out. And Niles starts running away, getting away as best he can, even though he's wounded. And we see that he's being hunted by this mysterious person in black with, like, a compound bow. Like, serious hunter stuff.
Yeah, and then we see, Niles actually knows who it is. He's, like, he calls him Roy at some point. So he's surprised, but he knows who the hunter is.
Yes.
Which they don't explain. And so then after that, I think Niles makes a run for it towards this cave. Mm-hmm. And then Roy follows him, and then Roy goes into the cave. Then, Niles goes in the cave as well. Sarah is freaked out by all this, as you should be. And as Sarah is trying to follow Niles, Niles says, hey, don't follow me. Get out of here. Go.
Yeah. Niles is crawling towards this glowing portal. We don't know what it is. They never really explain what it is, but he's crawling towards this glowing thing. And he turns to Sarah and he's like, no, don't follow me. Whatever you do, don't follow me. But she's, you know, very confused, very scared. So she follows him into the portal after, and then smash cut to Sarah waking up in her hotel room, and she checks her phone and it is the same day. It is still November 9th and her day is starting exactly how it started before.
Right. And then she finds Niles laying in the pool, as you do, drinking copious amounts of beer, and of course she's angry. It's like, what the hell did you do to me? What the hell was that thing in the cave? You know what is going on here? It's the same day.
And he explains, like, hey, we're in a time loop. This is why I didn't want you to follow me. There's, you know, we're stuck in here. There doesn't seem to be any way to break out of it. Sarah, of course, instantly in denial, and she's like, no. She kind of tries to break out of this, but it ends up in disaster.
Niles explains, it's a time loop. If you go back to the cave, your day starts over again, and if you fall asleep, the day starts all over again. And so, you can't, if you try to kill yourself and die, which I've done, I tried multiple times to commit suicide. As soon as I die, I wake up and I'm in bed again. So, of course, you know, she doesn't believe him. Sarah says, you know, take me back to the cave. Let's go back to the cave. At first, they can't find the cave because earlier in that day, there was an earthquake. Like a small earthquake, and the earthquake opened up the cave. So once they found the cave, they went in and the day started again. At one point, she wakes up and decides to stay up all night and drive back home to Austin, Texas, where she lives. And she's figured, if I stay up, it'll be the next day and I will have escaped this. But of course, she drives all the way back home to Texas. You know, she of course, she falls asleep, and it's still the next day.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, so there doesn't seem to be any way. And Niles kind of explains the rules to her. Like he says, like, if you die, your day resets. At one point, where she's despairing and she's trying to commit suicide, they're driving on the road together. She just turns to drive head-on into a semi. And Niles, it just takes it very nonchalantly. He starts to get into, like, crash position. She says, like, oh, what are you doing? Like, he takes off his seatbelt and gets into a crash position. And she says, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm trying for a quick, painless death. Because trust me, like, it really sucks, like, dying in the ICU. And, of course, you feel and remember all the pain that you experience, even if you don't have any lasting injuries. And,
right.
And, yeah, and they die, and soon enough, they wake up in their own individual beds.
Yeah, so, and it does it end. Oh, then at this point, they end up at a bar hanging out, and then I think they're playing darts at one point, and seeing Niles play darts reminds Sarah, hey, wait a minute, who was that guy that was shooting arrows at you?
Yeah, yeah. And he explains that was Roy, that was somebody, that was another guest at the wedding that I talked to, and the two of them, like, talked and hit it off, and they ended up doing drugs together. What were they doing? I can't remember. Were they doing mushrooms or they did cocaine together?
Yeah, because actually, the guy Roy, played by the great J.K. Simmons, the one and true J. Jonah Jameson. Mm-hmm. So, like, he was at the wedding, and they started talking as they started partying. They found some drugs, which Trevor had on him, the efficient that. Was banging out Niles's girlfriend, and like they start doing drugs and tripping and having this awesome time, and then they find themselves at the rocks by the cave, and then Roy's like, this was an amazing night, I want this night to last forever. And at this point, Niles had already gone through the loop a couple times, so it was in the early days.
Yeah.
So of course, Niles, drunk out of his mind and high, saying, oh, you want to stay to last forever? Well, then follow me, good sir, to this cave, and they will last forever. And of course, Roy does it, and he's now stuck in the time loop, and which Niles, of course, goes on to say, yeah, that was a mistake. I should not have done that.
Yeah, yeah. And so it turns out, I mean, Roy, of course, does not take this well because he's just without any warning suddenly reliving one day of his life. And so he starts to take it out on Niles, and periodically Roy shows up to just kill Niles in all manner of different ways. But Niles says that he explains that the one advantage is that Roy lives in Irvine, California. So he was like traveling to the wedding. So he only shows up every once in a while. With some of Roy's days, Roy does completely different things. But when I guess the bitterness and the anger boils over, he's just like, I'm going to go kill Niles. And so we see a montage of J.K. Simmons killing Andy Samberg in increasingly bizarre and interesting ways.
Right, like at one point, I think he sees that Niles is in the pool, and he puts something in the pool, and he lights the pool on fire with it. That was grisly. I was like, geez. I mean, you don't see Andy Samberg burn alive, but like the fact that
no, there's no gore or anything like that. It's more comedic than anything.
Right.
It's almost like a Roadrunner cartoon.
Yes, exactly. Wile E. Coyote, super genius.
Yeah, yeah, but. So, you know, this is why Niles kind of explains his philosophy to Sarah. He says the only way to live in this is just to embrace the fact that nothing matters. So it's a very sort of almost nihilistic way of looking at it.
Yeah. It's totally nihilistic. It's he basically has, like you said, adopted this philosophy of you just have to bear through this, suffer through the existence of life.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah. Yeah.
Which is, I don't know if I'd want to hear that while in a pandemic, but it is definitely a way to go through life.
Yeah, yeah. It's, so Sarah and Niles are kind of stuck in this together because, you know, Roy's not really in the picture all the time. And they start to hit it off. They start to get to know each other. Sarah at one point asks Niles, she's like, hey, have you had sex with anybody in here? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I've had sex. And she's like, oh, who have you hooked up with? He's like, well, I hooked up with the bartender at the wedding. And we kept the bartender apparently like giving Niles a hand job in the car, and she's like, "I hit somebody in this car once."
Yeah, that was. I think the bartender I noticed was. I mean, if you know L.A. comedy, that's a comedian Jenna Friedman, who I think she also wrote. Oh. I believe she also wrote for like the Daily Show too. But yeah, she's pretty funny.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, she doesn't have a big part in this movie, but she is very funny. And yeah, that scene in the back of the limo, it's just very, very funny. And like she confesses, like, "Oh yeah, I hit somebody in this car once. I don't think he ever walked again." And Niles ends up orgasming right on that, and it's just it's so wrong, but it's very funny.
I did not see that coming. You know.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
Yeah, Niles also confesses like he hooked up with a biker chick at the biker bar they go to. He once even had a homosexual experience.
Yeah,
just to try it, I guess. Because
hey, win in Rome.
You know, hey, if there are no consequences for anything, why the hell not?
Yeah. You
know? And then he says like he even tried to hook up with the bride Tala at the bar, and it's a funny scene where he goes up and taps the groom, Abe, on the shoulder, and he's like, "Hey, can I cut in?" And they're like, "It's the first dance." And he's like, "Oh, is there a rule against that?"
It's like, why are you being a prude, man? Come on.
And he's like, "Yeah, no, admittedly, that was a big swing."
Come on, be a bro.
But, yeah, we see a lot of Sarah and Niles. They're spending most of their time together, and they have a rapport. They get a rapport. We see them do a lot of stuff together.
Right, because I think, the two of them find, like, a kinship because Niles kind of believes, like, no, none of this matters. Life doesn't matter. It's whatever. And also, Sarah kind of doesn't really believe in love. Like, I think at the wedding, like, when Niles said, oh, they're happy that they found each other, she kind of scoffed at it. It's like, yeah, love doesn't exist. It's all bullshit. It's very they have both very negative views of the world and of things.
Yeah, and so they bond this way, and we see one night. I mean, they start just ditching the wedding regularly and just doing other things with their day. We see at one point they're lounging in another pool, and Niall says like, "Oh, this has kind of become my sanctuary. This is just this family that they're out of town. I don't know when they get back, but they don't get back today. So this is our place. This is where we go to get away from it all."
Right. And then we see like a montage of things that they're doing. Like they go to a firing range and just kind of, well, not even a firing range. It's like somebody's farm. Somebody who just has guns. Mm-hmm. Somebody who just has guns in a backyard and they start shooting things at it. At one point, Sarah sees like a plane in the sky. And I think she gets an idea of like, hey, let's go fly a plane drunk. And they do it. And of course they crash. And of course they wake up and they all fine.
Yeah, they steal the plane. It's drunk. They're like feeding a goat that a local resident has. They do a dance, a choreographed dance thing at the biker bar, dressed exactly alike. That was funny.
At one point also, I think Sarah figured out maybe it might be karma that gets us out of this loop. Maybe we need to do maybe we need to do like a selfless act. And you know, which I guess is kind of a callback to, you know, Groundhog Day, where it said, like, we need, like, to do a selfless act in order to get out of this time loop to, like, you know, to redeem ourselves. So at the wedding, Sarah, you know, while everybody's at the altar, and Sarah kind of looks like she's about to say something, like, during the reception. Instead, she kind of whispers something.
During the ceremony, not the reception.
Oh, right. I forget what reception ceremonies are.
Had an anniversary.
You know what? You're quite right, and I hope my wife doesn't listen to this episode. during the ceremony.
You've been married for how many years has it been now?
10.
10 years. 10 years. And I know what the difference... I've never been married, and I know what the difference is between a wedding and a ceremony and the wedding reception.
I got nothing. I can't pull myself out of this pit.
Okay. All right. I just want that noted for the record.
Duly noted. So during the ceremony, Sarah whispers something to her sister, and you know, it's something. No, we don't know what it is, but she has like a very, you know, distraught look on her face, and she's like, "Yeah, I'm sorry, it's true." And then she leaves, and we see that the sister looks very heartbroken, but we don't find out what it is till later. And Sarah thinks that was you know, the selfless deed she needed to do in order to get out of the time loop. She goes to bed, wakes up. That wasn't it. So at this point, she's like, fuck it all. Life is meaningless. Nothing means anything.
Yeah, yeah. Niles and Sarah, they grow even closer. We have one night where they're like out camping together in the desert, and like they've really bonded. And Sarah, at this point, she says like, "Well, look, we might as well just, you know, get this over with." And they have sex and in the desert, and it's more romantic than I'm making it sound, because they really have bonded as people.
Yeah, this point. I mean, well, first of all, we might as well get this over with. That's how most of my dalliances started back in my younger days.
Sure, sure, yeah.
If I had a nickel for every time. And also, like, while they're camping out, Sarah reveals to Niall that she was married before. She was married for 2 years. Yeah. And she says, yeah, like, I knew it wasn't going to work out as soon as I walked down the aisle. I knew it wasn't going to work out when I moved to Austin for him. Like, everything told me this wasn't going to work out, but I still stuck it out, and I still, you know, it didn't work out, and I wasn't shocked. So that probably adds to her feeling of why love is just bullshit. And it's like, basically she says, like, it's just a lie because people don't want to be alone and they can't deal with the fact of being by themselves. So they, you know, they tell themselves this fairy tale that love exists and blah, blah, blah. But she doesn't buy any of that hooey.
Yeah. 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 Very, very cynical person, very damaged person. They're both very damaged people in a way. And they kind of come together. And Niles, by this point, he's really just fallen for Sarah. He's fallen for her pretty hard. Sarah, still a little distant, but she has a definite bond with Niles.
Right. And also at one point, while they're camping, and I want to know what you thought about this too, where they both see, like, kind of walking off in the distance, dinosaurs. They see like a pack of brontosauruses or brontosauri walking through the night.
Yeah, actually, this was mentioned on the Wikipedia page for the movie. Apparently, those are actual landmarks. It's a roadside attraction in Cabazon, California. They're the Cabazon dinosaurs. And they're these two enormous steel and concrete dinosaurs named Dinny the Dinosaur and Mr. Rex. Oh. And just west of Palm Springs.
Oh, interesting.
And actually, they also appear in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Ah!
So
Andy.
So they go back. I don't know if they have an IMDb page, but maybe they should.
I think so. Yeah. So I mean, I think in the movie that we see the dinosaurs moving. So maybe. Niles does say, wow, those are some really good mushrooms. So they are on drugs at this point. So we don't know if, like, they're moving because they're on drugs or some other, you know, sci-fi spacey reason.
Yeah, I think probably it was the mushrooms, honestly. But I suppose you could put some other interpretations on that. I don't know. Honestly, I had a tough time seeing the dinosaurs because it was very, very dark, and I was just watching on my laptop, so they didn't come out real, real clearly to me. But
okay. All right. Fair enough. At this point, Niles and Sarah have made love. They were intimate. They had coitus. And, of course, they both fall asleep, and they wake up in their respective beds. And this is when we find out that when Sarah wakes up, we see that she's not in her bedroom. She's actually in the bedroom of the groom, because the night before the wedding, she hooked up with her sister's fiance, the groom.
Yeah, yeah, Abe. So yeah, she had spent the night with Abe, and they'd kind of hinted at this subtly earlier in the movie. Like the Sarah's father is talking to her at one point. He's like, "Hey, I knocked on your door, and you must have gotten up really early. It was like I knocked on your door at 6, and you were already up." And Sarah just goes like, "Oh yeah, I went hiking." And during one of the other times where she wakes up, we see like just a glimpse of a male torso, so we know she hooked up with somebody, but we don't know who until this particular morning. We see that she actually hooked up with Abe, the groom.
Yeah. So, and at this point, we kind of see why Sarah really can't live this day over and over again, because she's reliving one of the biggest mistakes of her life that she ever made.
Yeah, and she's... I mean, she starts out literally every day being reminded of this horrible thing she did, and that she feels like a horrible person. And Sarah and Niles, they're driving the next day, and Niles he's kind of giddy because they've made this romantic connection, and he's like, well, hey, we get to at least spend this together. And he wants to kind of talk about the fact that they had sex the night before, and Sarah's just trying to push everything down and doing her best to forget it.
Right. So she drives, like, she's like kind of drives a little erratically. And, mm-hmm. I think at this point, while they're driving down the road, like a cop follows them.
Yeah. She notices that a police officer has been following them for a while. And then she starts trying to drive more erratically to get the attention of the cop. But finally the cop car's sirens comes on, pulls them over. And she runs over to the cop car and saying like, oh, help me. This person's kidnapped me.
Right. Because I think at this point, Niles thinks, oh, that guy, that cop, that could be Roy. And that's something else that they also mentioned about how Niles never really like confronted Roy and apologized for bringing him into this time loop. Like he just thinks it'd be best to just, you know, run away from him and avoid him. Literally for eternity, instead of just have a talk with him and be like, I'm sorry I did this to you. So, like, Sarah has been pushing him to say, you need to talk to him, you need to resolve this, but he doesn't want to do it. So now that, you know, the cop car's following him and Niles thinks it's Roy, she's like, all right, now we're ending this now. You're going to, you know, you're going to, like, face him and, you know, say your piece.
Yeah. And How to describe this scene with Roy? You know, Roy is after them, but Sarah is just sort of like, everything we do is meaningless because no actions have any consequences. So she decides when Roy is dealing with Niles, Sarah gets into the cop car and hits Roy with the cop car, and like pins him between the cop car and their car, and. It looks like Roy is likely dead, but he doesn't turn out to be dead.
I think it just his legs are broken or something.
Right. And then like a motorcycle cop comes over and like tends to Roy and arrests both Sarah and Niles, and they're both on the side of the road handcuffed.
Yeah, Niles gets tased too by the cop. I think.
Oh yes, Niles gets tased. Because like Sarah ducks out of the way, and while they're cuffed by the side of the road, Niles confesses that he and Sarah, they actually have had sex before, and he's like, you know, thousands of times, because they hooked up at the wedding after he saved her from making that speech, and then they, you know, went to the beach and had sex, and this all happened like before the movie proper began. But so what we saw at the beginning of the film was really just Niles repeating something he'd done before. But he didn't want to tell Sarah that, just.
Right. It probably would have happened again, like at the beginning of the movie, but I think Roy interrupted it. So with the arrow to the back. So that's why things kind of spiraled.
Yeah. And, you know, Sarah, of course, very upset to hear this, and she decides to just end it all, and she just runs in front of a oncoming semi and kills herself and starts over the next day.
Right, because, like, I think her last words were, like, I'm getting out of this time loop right now. And so she, yeah, like you said, she walks in front of an oncoming semi and blam.
Yeah, and so then we cut to Niles waking up the next day. And by this point in the movie, he's gotten very used to the day starting with Sarah just bursting into his room to talk to him or whisk him away. Or so, you know, they're starting their day together as early as they possibly can.
Right.
But this time, Sarah does not come into the room. And he goes through, and he cannot find her. He goes out, and nobody knows where she went. Nobody knows why she left. And he goes through several days with not finding Sarah. He has no idea where she went or what happened to her.
Yeah, and throughout all this, he's, like, really searching for her, and he's getting, like, kind of more and more miserable as the days go on. Because, like, he finally found somebody that he, like, connects with and, like, literally the only person who knows what he's going through, and now she's gone. So he's, like, really, he's spiraling, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. That's a fair way to put it. He is despairing. He's reached rock bottom. So he goes about his day as best he can, but he's really just muddling through. And at one point he's hanging out in the groom Abe's hotel room, because Abe and his bride Talia, they were not spending the night together before the wedding, because tradition. and Abe and his groomsmen, they're like doing some lines of coke in there, and Niles is lying on the bed, and he smells Sarah's very distinctive perfume, which was Orchid Explosion, on the pillow of the hotel room bed, and he realizes that Sarah had spent the night there the night before, and that therefore she was sleeping with Abe.
Right, so, aha!
Yeah, and this was a perfume that, like, Sarah wore just to make her sister happy. Her sister had given her the perfume, and Sarah hates it, but she was like, oh, but she'd kill me if I didn't wear it, so, and it's something that's definitely identified with Sarah.
But yeah, so then he finds out that, you know, Abe slept with Sarah. He, you know, confronts her at the reception. And
What's a wedding reception, Darren? Can you explain to the folks?
That's when, like, you know, I don't need to tell you or the folks.
Oh, okay.
Well, no.
Okay. Well, you explained it thoroughly, so.
Yeah. It's like the thing.
So during what I presume is the next loop, he Niles publicly confronts Abe during the wedding, and like a fight breaks out, and like a fork gets into the groom's cheek, you know, as you do at wedding receptions.
No, I think you meant wedding ceremonies.
Oh yeah. Oh, you're right.
Now who doesn't know the difference?
Still you. And by the way, the groom is played by Tyler Hoechlin, who you might know as Superman on the CW shows that are currently running, on Supergirl and all those shows. And he's about to get a spinoff as Superman. I think what's that show going to be called? Superman and Lois, I think?
I think so. Superman. Yeah, we'll say that.
Yeah. Okay, let's say that. Because they've already done Lois and Clark, so.
So Superman and Lois, totally different thing.
Yes, totally different thing. But, you know, by this point, Niles, he realizes that he loves Sarah, and he wants to be with Sarah, and he wants to find her and find a way to be with her, whatever that means, and however he can do that.
At this point, he gets, like, very despondent and very depressed, so he decides to drive all the way to Irvine to meet up with Roy and be like, Roy, I'm turning myself in. Like, I'm miserable as hell. Like, just kill me. Do whatever you got to do.
And we discover that Roy actually he lives in his normal life. It's just this quiet suburban life. He's got a wife. He's got three very nice kids. And, you know, Roy, of course, he's horrified that Niles has tracked him down and found him. And he's like, but he introduces them. He's like, oh, honey, this is an old friend of mine. And we find out, like, Roy didn't even know Niles's name. He just didn't. He was like, this is my old friend, Niles. Oh, Niles.
I didn't even notice that till you just pitched, till you mentioned it. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It was very cute. There's a really nice scene where it's just J.K. Simmons and Andy Samberg sitting in Roy's backyard, and Roy explains that he's kind of found his peace. He's got a little serenity with this. He's like, hey, I get to spend this time with my wife. I've got, you know, these kids. I've got these two twins. My son is over there. He's watering a piece of dog shit, but it's great.
It's about the little thing in life.
Yeah. And like later today, one of my daughters is going to draw like a family portrait of us, and I'm going to be a grizzly bear. And he's just taking pleasure and solace in this stuff. But he recognizes the limitations of this time loop too. He's like, I'm never going to watch my kids grow up. I'm never going to get to give my girls away at their weddings. But he's happy in this limited time that he has with his family. And he just tells Niles, you've got to find your Irvine. Whatever that is, you got to find your Irvine.
Right, because I think when they first met Roy, he basically told Niles, like, you know, he said he had like a very down version of like marriage, saying, oh, people say marriage is like a bottomless pit of hell and whatnot. But, and then Niles asked him at that, like, I thought you hated marriage and all. Niles didn't expect to see all this beautiful family and a suburban home and wife and everything. But, you know, Roy was like, yeah, you know, life changes, you know, priorities change and things change. And like, once I was able to let go of the anger I had for you, I looked around. I was like, actually, this is a really nice day. Like, you know, my wife, my kids.
It's a perfect day.
Yeah.
Like, and I get to live in it forever, but I never get to move beyond that day. But he's enjoying that as much as he possibly can.
Yeah. Very zen way of looking at things.
Yeah, it really is. And Roy just says, like, you know, Niles, you shouldn't come here again. And Niles has one of my favorite lines in the movie. He just says, well, Roy, would you just kill me one more time to beat the traffic? And it's just delivered perfectly. It's just wonderful. And Roy's like, okay, you know, the side yard. And we get to Andy Samberg standing in like a trash, plastic trash bin so that they can dispose of the body or hide the body easily. And Roy's got his bow and arrow, and he's just going to kill Roy. Like, and he's like aiming this like point blank range.
They said, I hope. It's a very strange scene, but it's also kind of sweet at the same time. It hits a weird tone, but like I liked it quite a bit. It's one of my favorite scenes.
I just love that he like decides, oh, it's easier for Roy to kill me than for me to make that drive. I'd rather just die and have the time loop reset.
As someone who's gotten stuck in New Jersey and New York traffic on many occasions, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, I can sympathize.
If you can kill me so I wouldn't have to deal with like the turnpike traffic for one day, I'd take it.
Sure. So at this point, the movie backs up, and then we get to see the last few days from Sarah's perspective, and we see where she disappeared to, how she's been spending her time. And the first day after she gets up, she confronts Abe, who is in the shower, which is why we weren't seeing him right when Sarah woke up. And she's just like, this is a horrible thing we did. We're both horrible people, and we should never do this again. And we see Abe like just kind of break down in tears over guilt and remorse over this.
He's like, oh my God, I'm just like my dad.
I was going to say his dad is played by Peter Gallagher, but no, that's actually Sarah's dad.
Yeah.
So never mind.
Yeah, we get Peter Gallagher in this film too, folks.
Peter Gallagher, yeah, it's always fun to see him. And also, the mother of Sarah and Tal is played by Jacqueline Oberdors, who I remember from the last few years at NYPD Blue.
Oh,
and, she was good on that show, and I hadn't seen her in anything in quite a while, so I was like, hey, look, Jacqueline Oberdors.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. But so Sarah, you know, she breaks it off with Abe, and then she decides to escape the time loop any way she can, and she starts reading up on quantum physics just by taking a laptop to a bar, and she's taking online courses, and she like works her way through it day by day by day.
She teaches herself, you know, quantum physics, like you said, like gets a bunch of books, takes a bunch of notes, and I mean, I guess she figures, well, I have nothing but time on my hands, so like I'll dedicate every day to figuring this shit out so I can get the hell out of here.
This is somebody who would make the most of quarantine. This is somebody who's learning a new skill, learning a new... She's expanding her knowledge base.
Yes, I have not learned anything about quantum physics throughout all this.
Oh, no, me neither. Me neither. I mean, I marathon Community again.
Ooh!
That was fun.
Yeah, I'm up to season 4 right now, and it's good, but it's not season 2 or 3. But that's for another time.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, she making her way through the courses, and she gets to the point where like she's able to have like Skype chats or Zoom chats with professors online, and she's figuring out about her solution. And apparently, like the person that we see her talking to was an actual quantum physicist.
Oh shit! Really?
Yeah. I saw an interview with Krista Milioti on Harper's Bazaar, and she's like, "Oh yeah, that was an actual quantum physicist I was speaking to," and she actually researched quantum physics because she has like a big monologue that was largely edited out of the movie. But she learned about quantum physics so she would know what she was talking about.
Oh shit! That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, right?
Yeah. So, at this point, like she's studied as much as she can about quantum physics. Then she goes out to the cave and does like a bunch of kind of takes a lot of notes and experiments and whatnot. And near the cave, there's the farm where they were shooting off rifles that belongs to this guy named Spud. And Spud has a goat, which we actually see at the very beginning of this movie. And she does, she kind of uses the goat as a guinea pig to go into the cave and try to figure out how to get back. And at one point, we see her strap explosives to this goat and send them into the cave. Apparently, you can get explosives pretty easily out there.
You know, I didn't think of that. I mean, by this point, the movie's barreling towards a conclusion, so you don't really question it. But yeah, she did get her hands on a lot of C4 on a very short amount of time.
He
had time to research that too. So, you know, I guess she went on the dark web. She found some shady people and she got C4 on short notice. You can figure out how to do that if you have an infinite amount of time.
Indeed.
So finally she goes back to Niles. She wakes Niles up once again. And tells him that she believes she knows how to escape the time loop and have resume their normal lives. And Niles is like thrilled to see her again. And he confesses that he loves her, but he doesn't want to leave the time loop. He wants to just stay in the time loop forever with her because he knows, you know, it's what he knows at this point.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's something that gets talked about throughout the movie, where he's been in the time loop so long, he doesn't remember a life without it. Like at one point, Sarah asks him, well, what was your job? What did you do before this? And then he's like, oh, I genuinely can't remember. I don't know what I did before all this. So, like, at this point, the time loop is kind of all he knows, and it's where he's comfortable. Because he knows, well, if I leave this somehow and go back to the real world, it's all kind of like death and famine and all these problems. Yeah. But in here, it's nice, it's warm and comfortable, and I know it. So I'd rather stay here, and I'd want to stay here with you.
Yeah. And Sarah, of course, is just the opposite. She wants to leave because she cannot take constantly waking up in that time loop, waking up next to her sister's fiance and knowing that she did this horrible thing. She's got to break out of that at any cost. And she's figured out through her study of quantum physics a little about how this portal works, what's going on with the time loop. And she's like, there's a bit of like 3.2 seconds where if we set off some explosions, that'll break us out of that. Because she did this experiment with a goat. She sent the goat in with the explosions at just the right moment, and the goat did not come back. When she went back into the time loop, the goat was no longer there. So he got out somehow.
Right. So, and I think at that point now it's like, well, like, where is he? Did he die, or did he get into another dimension, or is he out of the loop? And she's like, well, I'm not 100% sure, but he's not here, and that's good enough for me to try to do this with myself.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, but Niles, he doesn't want to be a part of this. He doesn't want to go. He wants to stay in the time loop. So they're at a crossroads. They're at an impasse. So Sarah leaves him, and, you know, Niles is there alone in the room. He's locked his girlfriend Misty out of the room while he and Sarah are having this very involved conversation. And when Niles lets Misty back in, he breaks up with her.
Yeah.
Because he's like, you've been cheating on me for quite some time.
Yeah, at this point, he's totally over her.
Mm-hmm.
So then they go to the wedding. And at this point, Sarah knows this is going to be the last time she's going to be at this wedding, whether her experiment works or not. And she actually gives like a very sweet, heartfelt, like warm, like toast. She gives the toast she wished she would have given earlier on in the movie. And And then at one point she says, like, I love you with all my heart, you know, to my sister. And it's, and to Abe, you know, I think she pulls down the mic from her mouth and says, Abe, don't fuck this up. And at first, Abe kind of laughs it off, but then she gives him a look like, no, seriously, don't fuck this up. And then you see that Abe is, yeah, he's very remorseful what he did. And he understands, like, all right, I'm giving a second chance, or I can't fuck this up again.
Yeah, yeah. And he says very sincerely, I won't. So we get the feeling that hopefully Abe will learn from his mistakes and not do that again. But who knows?
Who knows?
But who knows? I mean, yeah. So, Niles is also at the wedding, and he's drinking alone at the bar, and he decides that he wants to be with Sarah, and he decides that being with her is more important than staying in the loop, and he's going to go after her. He's going to follow her.
Right, because I think at one point at the night, like as the night goes on, she leaves to go to the cave. But then I think Niles is like at the bar, that dive bar, biker bar they hang out with. And he's like very despondent because like the woman he loves is going to leave. And I think one of the bar flies, Darla, who he hooked up with, says, like, you know, what are you doing here? I mean, I don't know what you're looking for in your life, but it ain't here. So then we get that kind of rom-com trope where the guy or girl runs after the one they love, you know, as the one they love is about to leave and go away.
Yeah, yeah. And he steals a truck from the guy at the bar and goes after her. The truck breaks down, and then he finds the farmer that's nearby the cave. I think it was the guy who had the goat.
Yeah, it was. Spud, I think his name was.
Spud, yeah. And he makes up the story of Spud that he's his long lost son to convince him that to take his motorcycle or his moped, and he makes it the rest of the way, and he reaches Sarah like right as Sarah is there at the mouth of the cave, and she's there in her bridesmaid's dress with explosives strapped around her.
It's a good look,
and she's ready to go, and Niles like confesses his love for her again, and.
Oh, shit.
Explains to her like he'd rather die with her there in that moment than to go through life alone. And Sarah she's also kind of faced up to her shit at this point. She's like, I can live on my own. I can live with this. I can live with my mistakes, and I can deal with my mistakes going forward. And so they both really learned something from the time loop, you know?
Right. Cause I think, at one point, I think like, you know, he's pouring his heart out to her, and she says, well, what if, you know, because she still kind of believes, you know, love doesn't exist or whatever, or she still has reservations, and she says, like, well, what if we get sick of each other at some point? Like, and I think, and then Niall says, well, you know, we've already gotten sick of each other, and it's been great. It's been the best.
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, it's, and I really liked it, because it's a more realistic view of love than you get in most movies. Most movies are like, oh, you fall in love and then everything's okay forever. And Niles is like, no, I mean, we're in love, but, you know, we've seen each other at our best and our worst, and we know all of each other's horrible shit, and we still want to be together. And that's, you know, that's really what love's about, you know?
Right. It's like, I mean, I do like that, because, like, I think the writer was trying to stay away from as many of those, you know, rom-com tropes and, you know, cliches as he could. He wanted, like, a kind of a more realistic, more honest, you know, depiction of love. And I'm pretty sure he got it. Actually, I pulled up the speech Niles gave, which I really liked the speech that he gave at the end.
Oh, yeah. Did you want to read some of it? Or
Sure. Okay. So as he, you know, when Niles is at the mouth of the cave, he's trying to convince Sarah to come back. And he says, even though I pretend not to be, I realize that I am completely codependent, but that's cool. But I'm cool with it because I think that life should be shared now and I need you to survive. But it's so much more than that. I know you better than anyone knows you. And remember the night that we saw the dinosaurs, you said it yourself, in order to ever really know anyone, you need to know the entire package, the good and the bad. And I've seen your package and it is excellent, Sarah. And you're my favorite person, senior package. And you're my favorite person that I've ever met. And yes, I know that it's crazy odds that the person I like the most in my entire life would be someone I met while I was stuck in a time loop. But you know what else is crazy odds? Getting stuck in a time loop. I hope that blowing ourselves up works, but it's really irrelevant to me as long as I'm with you. And if it kills us, well, then I'd rather die with you than live in this world without you.
Aww.
Right?
So, and that's all, like, well, this one run-on sentence, because Sarah just gives Niles, like, one sentence to to justify it. So he's always kind of adding on to the sentence, and he's like, comma, colon, ellipsis. But he forgets the word ellipsis, so he says, like, dot, dot, dot.
I didn't know that either. I forgot ellipsis, too. I'll admit that.
Yeah.
I don't know ellipsis, and I don't know ceremonies.
This is correct. So they go into the cave together, and they're right in front of the portal, and they kiss in front of the portal right as she hits the detonator during that 3.2 second window. And
she said, I love, because she said, I love you too. Because earlier, Niall said, I love you, and she never said it back, but she said it back.
Oh, yes, 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 okay, yeah, that is important, yeah. Oh, yeah, and she loves him too, yeah, yeah, yeah. then we, you know, and then the glow just kind of envelops the screen goes black for several seconds. We don't really know what happened. We're thinking, like, oh, is this the end? Is this like an open ending? But, you know, we see them again, and we see them. You go ahead.
No, I was going to say they're in the pool of that house of that the family left on vacation. And yeah, like, mm-hmm. I said, we don't know if it worked, if it didn't work. Like,
yeah, they're in the same clothing as the day before, where they're in the, you know, he's in the Hawaiian shirt and bathing suit, and she's in the bathing suit we see her in before. So we don't know if this is yet another time loop, or if they broke out and they just happen to be in the same clothing.
Right, right. And so then at this point, Niles mentions, I should probably go pick up my dog. And yeah. She's like, you have a dog? I never heard about this. They're like, oh yeah, I left it with my neighbor or my friend or something like that. And then we see the family that lived in that house come out and be like, hey, who are you guys? What are you doing in our pool? And then Niles is like, oh, I guess they come back November 10th, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So their plan was successful. They broke out of the time loop. And yeah, that's it. They're together. Happy ending. They've broken into somebody's house, and she still slept with her sister's fiance, now husband. But they're dealing with it. They're getting past that.
Yeah, and at the end, it pulls up from the house, and we can sort of see again, like the dinosaurs walking in the distance on the horizon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Cabazon dinosaurs, and then they roll credits and. You're like, hey, oh, that was a great movie. That was really fun, and that was really cool. But no, wait, there's one more bit. We got a little mid-credits scene.
Oh, it's like an Avengers movie.
It really is. Niles and Sarah, they're going to join the Avengers.
Oh, I can't wait.
because their time travel abilities are a real asset. No, but we have a mid-credit scene, and it's just, we see Roy again, J.K. Simmons, and he approaches Niles at the bar, and he's like, hey, I got your girlfriend's note. Do you really think this could work? And Niles, who's in a suit, dressed up like he's a wedding guest, he just turns to Roy, and he's like, I'm sorry, I don't think we've met. I'm Niles. And in that moment, Roy realizes that Niles does not recognize him, which means that this is not a Niles who's gone through the time loop. So he's out. Like Roy and Sarah made it, or Niles and Sarah made it out, and Roy just realizes it's possible. So,
and that's awesome, because like honestly, like as the credits rolled, I was thinking in the back of my head, well, what about Roy? What's going to happen to him? And then they answered my thoughts with that mid-credit scene.
That was really great. I mean, I wasn't really expecting to see Roy again, and I wasn't really that worried about the plot hole of, oh, yeah, well, what about Roy? He's still stuck in the time loop. But I'm so glad they dotted that I and crossed that T, and because if I thought about it later, it would have bothered me. Yeah, that they would have basically condemned Roy and he would have had no way of knowing. So, yeah, she sent Roy a note somehow. I don't know how. Who cares? They got Roy's email or something.
It's like Back to the Future. He put it in his coat pocket.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? It doesn't matter. But the thing is that Roy realizes it's possible to leave, so he can leave too if he so chooses. And that's really nice, you know?
And that's the movie, guys. I mean, yeah, really great movie. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I saw it had gotten like a lot of good reviews, and then like a few of my friends who saw it said they really liked it. So I mean, I didn't know what to expect. I actually did see the trailer like a month or two ago, and I was like, oh, this could be interesting. And then I heard all the praise it got, and then I watched it, and I was like, oh, this was really good.
Yeah, I mean, the trailers, I did watch the trailer after I finished the movie, and the trailers, they really don't give away much because they don't want to spoil any of the plot points. And like I said at the top of the podcast, it's best if you don't know much going in. So I really hope that I haven't spoiled it for somebody who hasn't watched it and they foolishly chose to listen to this before watching the movie, because that is not the way to experience this movie. You need to just experience this as watching a movie.
Right. Like you want to watch this thing cold. It's the best.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a fine Chardonnay. It's best if served cold.
You will enjoy it the most, the least you know about it. And really good. I mean, I always liked Andy Samberg. I liked him on SNL. I like him now on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Kristen Milioti, I've been a fan of for years now. I mean, I think like most people, I first discovered her on How I Met Your Mother. And I've really liked her in other things since. She was in one of the seasons of Fargo, and she was in a great episode of Black Mirror, the USS Callister episode.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember that. That was a great episode.
That was a great episode, yeah. And I mean, I've just loved her in everything I've seen, and she's just, oh my god, she is like so attractive, so charming, so talented.
And also, Kristen Milioti from New Jersey.
Yeah, I learned that. She was like a theater kid from New Jersey. Where was she from?
Born and raised in Cherry Hill.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
So like down south, like near Philly, but still, it's Jersey.
Yep. And, and she was in Wolf of Wall Street, too. She was Leonardo DiCaprio's first wife in that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She's always good.
Yeah, and yeah. Also, the chemistry that Andy and Kristen have is really good.
Yeah, they really click. You really are rooting for them as a couple. I thought it was wonderfully written. I mean, I love that like both characters have their flaws, but they still work as people. And, you know, like Kristen's character is not just like the girl. I mean, she's got her own shit going on. She's got her own. I mean, her character might be more developed than Andy Samberg's character is, honestly.
That's fair enough. Yeah, she has like she has more layers, things going on.
Yeah, but it was something else. Yeah, It's I really enjoyed this movie. Really, really well done.
Can't recommend this movie enough. This movie was a home run.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a film. I mean, get yourself Hulu. If you don't have Hulu, check out Hulu. You can get a free month of Hulu, and this is a wonderful way to start. So
absolutely. So I'm checking our Twitter to see if we have any tweets about this bad boy, and we just got one in from Puppet Perspectives about it.
Yeah, sure.
It says, do you guys think it would have been nice to know how Andy got in the situation in the first place? Aside from that minor detail, this was one of the best Groundhog Day-esque movies since Tom Cruise's Edge of Tomorrow.
I still haven't seen Edge of Tomorrow, oddly enough. I think my general dislike of Tom Cruise has kind of kept me away from that one. But I may break down and watch that someday.
I didn't know you had some Tom Cruise beef. Is it on the level of Colin Jost hate?
I don't know. I don't know how I would rank them. I just got very sick of him during the whole Scientology couch jumping phase, and I have a lot of trouble watching him in movies ever since.
Fair enough. On a can you list the top 10 celebrities you hate from 1 to 10? Where does he fall?
Oh God, I am not prepared for this.
Okay,
I need to put lots of thoughts into this. I need to make charts and graphs. I will work on this, and I will get back to the celebrities I hate. And you know, there are some celebrities I'm just like, well, they're not for me, but. It takes a lot of energy to hate somebody, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. All right.
It would be more celebrities I'm indifferent to or that I don't like watching or hearing about. You know, I have no use for the Kardashians.
Oh, God.
You know, so I wish if they went away and if I never heard about them again, that would be great. But anyway, we're getting way off track.
Yeah, I didn't expect this.
You were about to read the Twitter comment.
No, I already did. Like he basically says,
well, refresh my memory. I got caught up in my Tom Cruise hate. And
as you do. I mean, basically he was saying, cause they never explain how Niles got caught in the time loop. Cause like that would mean he would have to have gone to that cave and walked through it. But like then the question comes up: what's he doing out there by himself? And like they never explain how he got into the time loop. He's just in the time loop. And
yeah, I don't think that necessarily needed to be explained. I mean, we didn't question he ended up in the desert with both Roy and Sarah at different points. So it was he ended up in the desert either with somebody else or by himself, just probably drinking or doing some drugs, and he discovered the cave portal and ended up stuck in a time loop. I think that was pretty clear from context, personally. But
yeah, but I mean, I think they're trying to say like he found the cave first, like because he was the one that brought Sarah and Roy there. So like, how did he find out about it? They never answer that question. I don't know if it's. I mean, it doesn't take away from the movie at all. I mean, maybe it would have been nice to know, but it's not. I don't think it's 100% like need to know.
I don't think it matters. I mean, I think they gave you enough context clues to know. I don't question him finding the cave. I don't think that that's a big leap or anything like that. So,
all right, fair enough.
I'm fine. I'm not. Yeah, that question isn't keeping me up at night.
Okay. All right. All right. Fair enough. So there's your answer, puppets.
Sorry, puppets.
All right. Yeah. So and that's the episode, guys. Thanks again for listening. Do you want to talk about what we're gonna do next week? The up and coming.
Well, there's one more thing. I did find a thing on IMDb under the goof section. They say at the end of the movie, Sarah tells Niles that she detonated the goat in the portal and that it was now simply gone and that it was no longer present in the loop with them. Yet when Niles and Sarah escape, a version of Niles still exists in the day, as shown in the post-credit sequence. So I don't know if that's an error or not. Because if Roy is still reliving that day, then anybody who was in that day would, I think, by definition, have to be in that day. So I think that version of Niles would probably stop existing if Roy gets out of the time loop himself, right?
I, dude, you're talking to a man who doesn't know what a ceremony is. I don't know if I can follow all this logic.
Sure. Okay. Well, you know, study up quantum physics for a few months. and then get back to me.
Will do.
Okay.
I'll get right on that, sir.
Yeah. But again, that doesn't bug me. I mean, by that point, I was fully on board with this movie. So even if that doesn't make strict sense by the rules this movie set up, I don't care.
I don't care.
So, you wanted to talk about what we're doing next week. What are we doing next week, Darren?
Yeah, what aren't we doing next week? Well, I'll tell you what we are doing next week. Guys, we're talking about a little movie that's on Netflix right now that stars one Tina Fey and one Amy Poehler. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Baby Mama.
Woohoo! Baby Mama!
Yeah.
Never seen this one. Looking forward to seeing it. I know it's about Tina Fey wants to have a baby, and Amy Poehler's character, who's kind of a screw-up, is going to be her surrogate mother. And that's the extent of what I know about it.
That's all you need to know. Just go in there. That's a starting point.
Have you seen it before, Darren?
Yeah, I saw it years ago. I think I don't remember much about it, but I remember liking it. But yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it.
You remember liking it. Okay.
That's my rave review. I remember liking it.
All right. Well, you know, and as I noticed that it was streaming on Netflix now, and I was like, well, hey, we haven't done a Tina Fey, Amy Poehler movie as of yet, and that would be fun. Did you happen to see the special episode of 30 Rock that they did this week?
I did see that, yeah.
How'd you like that? What'd you think of that?
I mean, I enjoyed it. It's good to see, you know, a lot of the old characters again. I know a lot of people had, you know, issues with it because the whole thing just seemed to be one big hour-long commercial for Peacock.
They were really pushing the Peacock stuff hard.
They were pushing that Peacock right down our throats. But aside from that,
Peacock. I thought it was pretty well done. I mean, it had the feel of 30 Rock, of course, because it was co-written by Tina Fey and Robert Carlock. And I thought it was, like, technically pretty impressive because it wasn't like the special episode of Parks and Rec they did a couple months ago where everybody's, like, on a Zoom chat. This felt more like a real episode of 30 Rock where, like, you know, people are outside and there's interacting. Of course, they were, I'm sure, practicing social distancing while they were shooting this. And they did it kind of cleverly. I mean, most people are apart because it is taking place in the real world and it's taking place in pandemic world. So there is a lot of people like communicating via Zoom chat and stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they made a point to, it's like, I think you're right. Like, it looks like a more cleaned up version of the Parks and Rec reunion thing.
And they did a lot. I believe they did a lot of like blue and green screen stuff to put people in various environments. And it was mostly pretty convincing, but there were a few shots where you're like, I don't think that person's actually there.
There was that one point where like Tracy was leaning against the fish tank and like, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I can definitely tell he's not leaning against no fish tank.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so we see like Tracy's mansion and we see, I'm sure they had like just Alec Baldwin's house or one of his houses doubling as Jack Donaghy's house. And, we had Kenneth, the former Page, now the head of NBC. We had him in drag, acting as his own assistant. But it was just fun to revisit those characters and see a little more and spend a little more time in that world.
Yeah, yeah, I dug it. Definitely brought back some fine old memories.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, Peacock, which they really pushed the Peacock stuff hard, but
they pushed it hard. Hard and fast.
Yeah.
Good times.
Good times. But that is about it for us this week. So next week, Baby Mama, and then we'll figure it out. We don't know what we're doing yet. Just don't ask yet. We'll tell you next week. Don't get greedy.
Yeah, we're playing
coming next week. Don't get greedy.
Yeah, I mean, we're recording this thing from our bedrooms. We're giving you free entertainment, people. You'll take what.
Well, I mean, I am technically in my living room, but that's kind of like my bedroom because I sleep on my couch a lot.
Oh, boy. That's a TMI, my friend. All right.
What, me sleeping on my couch is TMI?
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to imply something, but sure.
Okay. I'm not sleeping on my couch because I'm trapped in a horrible marriage or anything like that. I live alone, Darren Patterson.
Yeah, you sure do. And
wow.
And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at Darren Credible, D-A-R-A Incredible, Twitter and Instagram.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic. And you can follow the show page at SNL Nerds Show on Twitter.
Right. And as always, please donate to our Patreon at non-productive.com. Give us money. Lord knows we need it.
Yes. And please rate and review us on Apple iTunes or on the podcast app of your choice, because that really does help the podcast. You know, please just, if you enjoy the podcast, tell a friend about it. We want to boost up the audience. We want to get more people listening.
Yeah, spread the word.
And, just tell us more what you want to see on the podcast. If you have a movie you'd like us to watch out, check out or watch out for, you know, if you want to warn us off a movie, that's good too.
Don't watch Nothing But Trouble.
Don't watch Tommy Boy again, because you both already watched it and you didn't like it very much.
Oh boy.
Please help us spread the word. Yeah, because we'd like to get more people listening. And if there's something you want to see on our 100th episode is coming up, let us know that.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, we're 100 episodes. Holy hell. It's
100 episodes. What are we going to work out for that? We don't know yet. We're going to figure that out.
Yeah, your guess is as good as ours.
No, actually, I think our guess is a little better than yours, because we're the ones who do the podcast. So I'm not going to sign off on that, Darren.
John, what's a ceremony?
Your guess is substantially worse than ours, because we can affect this much more than you can. Let's face it.
Oh, true indeed, John. True indeed.
True indeed. But anyway, we will see you next week with Baby Mama. Anything else to say, Darren, before we sign off?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Well, then. We're going to step into the portal now. Bye, you guys. Thanks very much.
And until then,
nerds out.
Nerds out.
Yay. I was thinking it might be funny if, I may ask Frank to do this, if it might be fun if he, like, looped in the very beginning of this podcast like it was all about to repeat again.
Oh, that's actually pretty smart. Did we do that for Groundhog Day?
I don't know if we did. I don't remember. I'd have to go back and listen to that. And, oh, God, who wants to do that?
Yeah, I don't listen to the show at all. So I mean.
No. I don't care for one of the hosts. all right. I'm going to stop unless you want to say something thoroughly entertaining.
Why start now?
Okay. Nice.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.